Hello and welcome to The Ordinary Knitter, the knitting podcast that's mostly about the projects. Hello and welcome to episode 28. To the Sea is finished, hooray! My big discovery of the last week, stitch fiddle, charity knitting, wrap tops, garden clog socks and polystyrene balls. Hello and welcome to episode 28. I'm going to borrow a tip from Helen Stewart, who does the Curious Handmade podcast, one of three knitting podcasts that I listen to. At the beginning of her podcast, after she's through her initial preamble, she gives you her social media names, and I sometimes forget altogether. I often wait till the end, and I don't know if everybody gets to the end. So I just thought I will mention them at the beginning, and then if you're interested in finding me on any of those platforms, you can, and I would love to hear from you and love to chat. On Twitter, I am The Ord Knitter. I've been a little bit more active on Twitter recently, certainly from that account. I seem to spend my life on Twitter from my personal account and business account. And sometimes The Ord Knitter account comes a bit of a poor second. On Instagram, I'm The Ordinary Knitter. And on Ravelry, I'm Ordinary Knitting. It's lovely to sit down with the prospect of just talking about knitting for half an hour. Life is pretty stressful here at the moment. I won't dress it up. I say no big dramas or tragedies. That's not 100% true. But anyway, it's just life's a little bit difficult at the moment. So I'm really appreciating more than ever being able, partly you have the solace and the slight zen of knitting, but also one of the projects that I've been doing has just had something in it I've had to think about a bit. I've had to concentrate. I've had to make sure I don't lose my place, especially as I go through decrease rounds. I'll tell you about that. And it's been really good to have something else to think about and concentrate on. Also, my big achievement, this week, today is Tuesday, end of last week, was it? Saturday, Sunday, I finished To the Sea, hooray! Actually, it was Friday, I happen to remember now. So that was great news. It looks fine, it's all finished, all woven in, my husband's wearing it. I didn't block it. My husband is a large chap who fills his jumpers, and I'm not the sort of person who needs the thing to be finished to a pristine, measured finish. I finished it, he put it on. Oh, I think I folded it up and presented it nicely in the middle, and then he put it on, and apart from a day when he was helping somebody move house, he's worn it every day since, so blocking it would have achieved nothing for anybody, would have delayed how long he could wear it. Before I started this podcast at the beginning of this year, I knitted him a pullover called Terry's Pullover, a free download from somewhere, but I have a feeling it might have been a contingent on a newsletter sign up. And that's lovely. That was quite a lot of work. It has a complex cable type pattern around a shawl collar, and the weather has got colder here now. And he said the other day, "Have you seen that red jumper? The red jumper I knitted you?" "Yeah, can't find it." "You can't find it?" So, I found it eventually, but it wasn't in any of the obvious places. It was rolled up in a bag with some stuff which he'd put away and was quite sure those are things that don't fit at the moment. Right, okay, no, it was in there, so that's fine. So that's had a wash because it's been sitting rolled up for months. And that's now back in the mix, which is good. So I may knit him another jumper this winter. I'm not sure. I got this blue yarn, just let me double check what it's called. Yes, it's Kirkton House Rainbow Aran. I confess it's from Aldi, but then a lot of the yarn I get is from Aldi. Not all of it, but a lot of it. It was one of the reasons why I chose the name The Ordinary Knitter, because I am very much an ordinary knitter who uses very pedestrian yarns, partly due to budget constraints, but also because they're quite adequate for my needs. We don't live a fancy lifestyle. Things don't need to be cashmere and merino and this, that and the other. Also, I don't get on with wool. I'm quite allergic to it. So all in all, the sort of stuff from Aldi meets many of my needs, but not all of them. Happy to go to my local yarn shop, very happy to go when I'm looking for something quite specific or a little bit special. So the yarns that I've got at the moment, the main thing I could knit him a jumper out of for Aaron is the rest of this Kirkton House. But it's a blue marl, and I liked it when I bought it. And having used it for a few projects, I'm just not quite so sure now. It's fine for socks and things like that, maybe hats, but I'm just not sure. I made the jumper for my son, having said that. Sorry, interrupting myself, it's a bad habit. If you look on my Ravelry pages, you'll see a project called Lawrence, which I talked about quite a lot one way and another. I made a jumper for my son in Lawrence, and actually it looks really nice on him. When I see him wearing that, I really like the yarn. I don't know why, something's just making me not absolutely sure about using it for a jumper for my husband, but I've got too much other stuff to do at the moment to worry about that. But in the new year, I might throw these, I've got 300-400 gram skeins, I might throw them at him and say, what do you think? Do you actually want a jumper made out of this? Actually, I've got more than that. I've got 3 unused skeins, and I've got 2 part used skeins that are both on the go at the moment. I'm knitting some socks, which I'll tell you about later on. Usually I knit socks, I do them toe up 2 at a time. Usually I knit from both ends of the skein, but I just could not find the centre of this skein for love nor money the other day. So I just admitted defeat and just got a new skein. So we'll see. There's lots of options. There is one I think that's quite nice. I just don't know whether it's going to work for him in that blue. We'll see. I will consult him, which is obviously very generous of me. If you listened to last week's episode, you will have heard me talk about these Halloween pumpkin apple covers. They're very sweet. They're a little apple cozy pattern, not my own pattern, but I modified it last year and put a pumpkin face on it, you know, standard pumpkin style face. Well, I say standard. There are some incredible pumpkin carving designs out there. It really puts the three triangles of my youth, they sort of knocks them into a cocked hat, really, although perhaps they'll come back. And as a sort of retro style, it's about all I can manage anyway. And I did another one this year with a slightly different face, and I wanted to share the charts. And I thought, oh, I don't know, really easy, really simple, I'll just do a spreadsheet or something. Well, I'm quite capable with spreadsheets, but when you're trying to achieve a visual effect, that turned out to be a lot more difficult than I'd anticipated. So initially I just put a picture of my hand-drawn chart on the show notes, which was very inadequate really, but it was the best I could manage at the time because I didn't have an awful lot of time to devote to this. But later on in the day, I discovered a website called Stitch Fiddle. If you bear with me a moment, I will just check. Yeah, stitchfiddle.com. And it's a site where you create your charts. It's incredibly simple. I do sometimes accept that I have to work out and find instructions for how to do something, but most things I like to be fairly intuitive. You'll have picked up by now that I'm not a terribly patient person. I'm not somebody who enjoys going through practice rounds. I wanted to get this right first time. And they're great. It really works. And I've done a third face as well, and I have linked to those in last week's show notes. So you may not chart, you may have a system for charting, you may be very happy continuing to do it by hand. And generally, I'm very happy to chart by hand when it's for my purposes. But if you want to create charts to share, then I would suggest you try Stitch Fiddle. It's great. It's free sign up. Certainly, however many charts you're allowed to have and so on has certainly been adequate for my needs so far. I would really recommend it. Worth going and having a look and see if it works for you. Continuing to get all my little odds and ends out of the way first, I was absolutely delighted to discover yesterday that there is a charity knitting group within fairly easy reach of me. This came up, I took part in one of these Twitter hours yesterday from one of my business accounts, and this came up in passing, and I was so excited that I completely left my business head to one side and was saying, oh, where's that? Can I join? And it turns out that the yarn is donated by the local yarn shop in Leominster, Stitches, and they make things for charity. They've raised £1,000 for charity so far this year, which is brilliant. And at the moment, I'm ashamed to admit, I'm doing no volunteering, I'm doing no fundraising for anything at all. I've just been too domestically focused, actually, to the point where I think it's, well, not just domestic as in house and housework and stuff, because that's laughable, just my own concerns, my family businesses, they've just been completely filling my horizon, and that's not good for you. It happens, nobody's fault, but it's tremendously healthy to be able to step back, go somewhere else, go and do something completely different with people that, well, I sort of know one person who goes, but basically the people are new to me. So I've got high hopes for that. You take your own needles, but the yarn is donated. And from the photographs I saw yesterday, it looks like they're doing blankets in, you know, sort of Aran worsted weight type things. So I'll take a few different sizes of needles, but I think 4 or 5 millimeter is probably going to be about right. So that's really interesting. I don't quite know what happens between times. I'm sure I'm not going to manage a whole blanket on Friday morning. So I don't know if you leave your needles there or if someone else picks up your projects and carries on, or if you take it home. I don't know, really. So it's really lovely to have something else like that to go to. It's just the kind of thing I've been looking for. I can't really justify giving up 2 mornings in any week for a knitting group. So I think what I'll do is go to that on the week that there isn't a Knit and Natter, because Knit and Natter is the 2nd and 4th Wednesday of the month. So I'll go to this other group on the other weeks, and that should be a nice mix. Knit and Natter was bulging last week. It was great. There were lots of us, and we had somebody new, so that's always good. Somebody who'd had a very interesting life farming in Wales and living in New Zealand and all that sort of thing. So that's great. That was she was a very welcome addition to the group. Last week was half term, so the opportunity to get out to Knit and Natter was very welcome. Now that I've finished To the Sea, I can start my next reasonably big project. And I have done about 8 inches of Ivy by Glenna C, and that's a free Ravelry download. It's a wrap top. I've talked a few times over the last few months about the things I would like to knit for myself, and I've been wanting to do a grey wrap top, and I've just been thinking about it, and while I was doing To the Sea, it was very much front and centre in my mind. Initially, I couldn't decide whether I wanted to do a cardigan or whether I wanted to do a top, because I really need both. And in the end, I decided that grey was something I was missing. I love grey. Ironically, I wear more grey in the summer, actually. I've got several grey vest tops, a grey cardigan. But I don't really have proper winter tops in grey. And I've got lots of lovely grey DK. So I'd planned a wrap top for a while. I like them. I'm wearing one today, actually, a very old Bowden one. It must be 10 or 12 years old, but it's fine. The moths have left it alone, which is always a bonus. And I had a pattern in mind. I was going to knit, crossover cardigan, must have taken them hours to think up that title, by Thomas B. Ramsden. I've knitted a few Thomas B. Ramsden patterns. I like them. This wrap top, the picture, is relatively uninspiring. I think one of the things that appealed to me is it's in a nice colour. It's a sort of shade of teal, which is a colour I quite like. But I thought, well, hey, it's a wrap top. You know, wrap top is a wrap top is a wrap top, really. That'll be fine. But I went to cast on, and initially you do a load of rib. And I thought, well, you don't really need rib. I mean, when I look at this one I'm wearing, okay, it's a woven cotton rather than a knit, but, you know, it's got a hem, but it's not got a welt. You're not pulling this on over your head. And I thought, I mean, on the pattern, it must have 4 inches of rib. And I just thought, partly, you know, it gets awfully tedious. Having just done 22 centimetres of rib for the roll neck onto the sea for my husband, I wasn't really in the mood to start another X inches. And as I say, I just felt it wasn't really necessary. But I thought, rather than just doing it plain, I'll see maybe about doing something a bit decorative. So I started looking around, and that is when I found this pattern, Ivy, by Glenna C. The element of it that jumped out to me, sorry, rat-a-tat-tat, I'm just looking it up on Ravelry, because I've been working from a printout, but I want to give you the proper information. There we are. Yeah, it's a free Ravelry download. When you look at the pictures, you can see that it has, instead of where you might expect there to be a ribbed welt around the waist, it has this decorative thing going on instead, and it has the same thing at the cuffs. I thought, right, okay, well, what I'll do then is I will aim to do the main body of this wrap top from Thomas B. Ramsden, because I like the basic dimensions. In fact, when you look at the style of Ivy, I wonder whether I actually like the body of the Thomas B. Ramsden pattern more than I like the body of Ivy. But in the end, as I say, it's a wrap top. It pulls round you and you do it up to suit you. So in the end, as long as it's not some outlandish shape, you think that's going to be okay, really. So in the end, what I did was I started off doing the decorative waist arrangement from Ivy, and I've just decided to carry on doing Ivy. That sort of, it just seems a bit unnecessary to hack the two patterns together. The only thing which could become a slight issue for me, but I'm hoping I can bodge it if it really turns out to be a problem, is that because I started off expecting to do the Thomas B. Ramsden pattern, I started off with 3.25mm needles, and Ivy uses 3.5. So when I got to a certain point with this decorative panel, which I'm assuming isn't exactly going to be screaming over me anyway, I'm hoping it's going to be slightly loose anyway, so I should have a little bit of positive ease to play with. When I sort of decided, right, I'm actually going to carry on with Ivy as it's meant to be, rather than doing the decorative bit and then turning it into the Thomas B. Ramsden pattern, I just switched up to the 3.5mm needles. You can't tell by looking. So I'm quite optimistic about this. It's a twisted rib, this decorative edge for Ivy. I've never done twisted rib before. It's fine, I mean, it's not difficult, but the main issue is, this is what I was talking about in the introduction, you have to concentrate. Essentially, in the pattern, because it's knitted flat, you've got a right side and a wrong side. I've knitted in the round so much recently that I actually had to sort of almost, mentally readjust to knitting flat. And you essentially, at one point, you have a section of three stitches, which on the right side is a knit three, and on the wrong side, obviously, it's a purl three. But the thing is that as you go through your decrease rounds, it becomes, if you're on the right side, it becomes a knit two for several rounds, then it becomes a knit one. And essentially then, if you're on the right side, what you're left with is, I'll be honest, I cut there because I started to get myself in the most monumental tangle. Anyway, to cut a long story short, by the time you've decreased, what you end up with on the right side is effectively knit three, purl one, knit three, purl one. So you lose any distinguishing features in your 10 stitch sections of repeat. And that matters when you come to, there's two rounds where you slip stitches and there's one round where you're cabling. And obviously then, if you don't know your ass from your elbow, that's just going to go all over the place. So when I got to that stage, I stuck stitch markers on the needles just so that I could tell where my sections of 10 were, and that became very valuable. The cable row from time to time was a bit fiddly because the stitches were relatively small. I had to use a very fine cable needle that I have, and it kept falling out. And because I was also sort of purling, and I never had more than three stitches of the same sort, knit or purl, in a row, and then I was cabling, and it was becoming incredibly faffy and very slow. And what I started doing, as you obviously, you know, with cables, they're usually a mirror image. And on one side of the cable, the stitch that I was meant to put on the cable needle had been slipped for the previous two rows. So it was a really big, obvious loop. So I could literally just slip it off the needle and leave it hanging on the front of the work, knit the next two stitches, come back and pick up the loose loop, knit that. And that's worked perfectly well. And it was much, so much quicker. It halved the amount of faffing around I was doing with this cable needle, which was, you know, the width of a toothpick. And it got me thinking about this business of cabling without needles, which I have heard of and I have considered doing before. And this is typical of me. I just totally assumed I knew what it was. I just assumed you left your stitches blowing in the wind while you did what you were meant to do. But, and so I actually tried that on the other side of the cable, but the difference on that side was that the two stitches that were meant to go onto the cable needle, they hadn't been slipped for the last two rows, so they weren't nice big loops. They were literally just live stitches, small live stitches that normally you would knit, normally you would have on a knitting needle, and it made me nervous, so I only did that once. I didn't lose either of them, but I felt it was a bit of a close run thing. So I carried on using the cable needle on that side, but it made me think I really need to look up properly cabling without a needle and see what it really is, because are people really being brave enough to leave loads of live stitches just sitting there? So I looked it up this morning. I'll put a link in the show notes, but I looked up, I just Googled it, as it were, I YouTubed it, and it came up with a knittinghelp.com needle called Knitting, Making Cables Without a Cable Needle. And this woman made the point that she only does this if her cable pattern is three stitches. She said if she does it for more than that, she finds the knitting's too tight. So it's one of those things you would need to experiment with. I imagine that that would vary between project, needle size, yarn type, and all the rest of it. But basically, what she does is she rearranges the stitches on the left-hand needle before she starts. So she does briefly leave stitches just sitting, hanging out of the front of the work, but not, she's not actually knitting. She is literally just, she leaves those there, she moves a stitch from, she slips a stitch from the left to the right needle, puts the two loose stitches back onto the left needle, and then puts the stitch that she'd slipped from left to right back onto the left needle. So effectively what she's done is she's on the left needle, the stitches are now arranged in the right pattern for how they need to be stitched, just without the cable needle stage. And I can really see that if you have got a short cable row, like I had for instance, that would have worked really neatly. Now I'm doing the back section of Ivy at the moment. I'll have the two front sections to do and both the sleeves, all of which will have the decorative edge. So by the time I've done all of those, I should be an absolute expert. I think I'll probably continue just to drop off the stitch that's the stitch that's been slipped for the previous two rows and is just a great big obvious loop that you can't really miss because that's not going anywhere. But for the other half of the cable, I think that technique will be really, really useful. So I always love learning a new technique. I'm sure I'll do it for this project, then I won't need to do it again for anything for ages and I'll forget how to do it. But hey, you know, it'll be in there somewhere. So anything that makes your knitting flow more quickly has to be a bonus. Because this project is one I was saying you really have to concentrate on, I needed some no-brain knitting, and so I have also cast on for Garden Clog Socks by Sarah Stevens. That's Stevens with a V. It is a very simple clog design. Knitted clogs. Very simple sock design. The reason they're called garden clog socks is because they're quite short. They're designed to fit inside Crocs. I'd never worn Crocs until about 10 years ago. And we went on honeymoon to Sark. And if you've ever been to Sark, you'll know that it doesn't have any tarmac roads. Well, not that I can recall. Most of the roads are just sort of earthy and stone. And because it was my honeymoon, I was flopping around in pretty sandals and lovely decorative flip-flops, and I just felt like I was walking on hot coals most of the time because the stones in the road were digging through the soles of my totally inadequate footwear. And because Sark is, it's an island and people do a lot of fishing and so on, we saw these Crocs for sale. I mean, everyone knows what they are now, but 10 years ago, they were relatively unknown. Anyway, I don't commit the sartorial sin of going out in public wearing them, but for the last 10 years, I have worn them in the house without fail. They keep my feet warm, and most importantly, they protect my feet from Lego. Also, I share a bathroom with a small, well, a downstairs bathroom with a small boy, so God knows what else they've protected my feet from over the years. So I'm incredibly fussy about proper shoes and boots, but in the house, Crocs rule. And these clog socks are, they're sort of low rise, so they're designed just to fit with these, basically. But you could make the calf part as long as you wanted. And the other thing I really like is that they have a rolled cuff rather than a rib, and that really appeals to me because I'm a lazy moo when it comes to doing all the rib on a pair of socks. I can understand when you do socks cuff down, at least you've got the cuff over with, you know, because it's not the most exciting part. I probably sound like I've got a bit of a thing about cuffs and ribbing, and I just find it a bit boring, that's all. So I've cast on for these again. That is with the Kirkton House Rainbow Aran in the blue and white. By complete chance, I appear to have cast on at more or less the same part of the variegation in the yarn for both socks. So that was complete fluke. It's not perfect, but it's not bad. So I haven't made the same mistake as before. I did a pair of socks for my daughter recently where I failed to put in the rib, and she is wearing them, to be fair, but I think they are like slightly squeaky to get on. So I've remembered to put the rib in on the top of the foot for these. From a glance at the pattern, it looks like it's a Flegel heel. I love a Flegel heel. So essentially, these should just fly. The problem is, although they're a no-brain knit, because I couldn't find the centre of that ball, of the ball of yarn I was knitting from, I've now got two great big 400-gram skeins on the go. So it's not a particularly portable project. When I take my son to his swimming lesson, as I do on a Tuesday evening, I have to have everything on my knee. If I'm very lucky, the seat to my right is empty and I can put my yarn on it. I knit with my yarn to the right. And that's great, that's ideal, but I can't always do that. And you know what it's like when you've got your yarn sitting comfortably and somebody sort of walks past and stops and, you know, you think, yes, yes, it is taken. My yarn is sitting there, but you know you have to pick it up and be, you know, a pleasant human being. And sometimes I've ended up balancing on my knee, yarn, pattern, notebook, pencil, and it's just a recipe for disaster. So I might just take my top, my Ivy tonight, because it's relatively straightforward at the moment. I'm just knitting, because I've done all of the decorative bit for the back, I'm now just knitting stockinette up the back until it gets to shaping for the armholes. So that's relatively straightforward. It's fairly brainless and it's still quite small. I'm so used to knitting with Aran. I've done so much of it recently, or if I'm using sock yarn, socks are fairly quick. But I can see sometimes it makes my heart sink a bit as a project knitter, because I think, oh my goodness, you know, I'm only a couple of inches above the decorative thing. I've got all the rest of the back and the two front panels and the sleeves, so it's going to take me a while. I was absolutely delighted to receive an email last week from a friend of mine who I've known for, oh my goodness, 25 years. I met her while I was at university. She didn't go to university with me, but I had to do some work experience. I did archaeology at university, and as part of my degree, I had to do time in the field. And instead, I spent mine working in finds processing for the rescue archaeology unit where I lived, which was absolutely wonderful. It was just a halcyon time, as you can probably imagine. Archaeology and knitting seem to go together very well. There's quite a camp of archaeologists in the knitting world. It was absolutely happy days, and we're still friends now. And I don't see her very often because she lives a couple of hundred miles away, but she and her husband were passing through near where we live a few weeks ago, so we saw them then, and she's going to be up this way again next week. So I'm telling you this for a reason. We've got a big night out next week. We're going to go out for the evening with a third friend who was also around in those days and who just happens to have washed up not too far from me. I'm in Herefordshire and she's in Gloucestershire. So we're meeting up for a big night out next week, which I'm really looking forward to. I really need it, and I hardly ever do things like that. And I had thought, oh, this top, can I get it ready for then? And I realised last night, no, Heather, no, let it go. You know, there's no way you're going to have this top done by next week. So I might go completely mad and allow myself to acquire a new item of clothing. But I don't know. I'm sure when the time comes, I'll think, no, probably better not. So my theory was, great, you know, I'll take that tonight and that'll get me a bit further on, but it's not going to be far enough on. But never mind, I was saying to somebody who was prepared to listen the other day that I think by the time I finish this, I'm going to be really pleased with it. I just hope I don't do something stupid and throw coffee down it the first time I wear it or something, you know, with all this work. I'm not used to putting in so much work on something for myself, but there's also so many other things I want to knit. I sort of thought to myself earlier that perhaps next year should be the year of knitting for myself. It feels very selfish. Knitters like to knit for other people. We knit for love, usually. And normally that's not directed at ourselves. It's directed at our children and our parents and our other halves. But there are so many things that I would like, and I'm not in a position to just run out and have a clothes buying spree. Not many of us are. So I think that's just going to be the way it's going to go. So by this time next year, I'd like to have knitted myself. I'm just quickly having a glance at my stash. I have embarrassing quantities of this grey DK. I have at least 12 skeins. So I'd like to knit myself a cardigan as well in grey. A sort of autumn winter weight cardigan. I've got astonishing quantities of light summer cardigans, none of which I have knitted, some of which I've been given, many of which are second hand. Very few of my cardigans are new. I actually quite like second hand. It's not a sort of, oh poor me, I can only afford second hand. I like second hand furniture, second hand books, and I'm very happy with second hand clothes as well. Sue Ryder, the Sue Ryder shop in Leominster, sells all its clothes for £2, which seems like a bit of a steal. You feel you should be making a donation as well. But I do buy books for my son in there as well and things like that. But, you know, it's too good to turn down, really. But I've got lots of grey DK. So a grey cardigan and a black cardigan, because I've got a very thin black cardigan. It's not really up to the weather conditions. Plus, I'd also like to make myself something in cream. I've still got a lot of that cream Aran. I've also got this purple, but I'm not sure about that purple. I can imagine knitting something and then every time I go to wear it thinking, maybe not today. So I'm not sure what to do with that. But I think perhaps I should just bite the bullet next year, because there's not all that much of this year left, and get those things made next year. I'd like to finish by talking balls, and not for the first time. I don't know if I've mentioned before. I may have done. I can't recall. Going in chronological order, 3 years ago, about now, I slipped a disc, which obviously wasn't a lot of fun, but I did what you're not meant to do. You're not meant to sit still for long periods of time, but when you cry in agony with the merest movement, you end up kind of staying a bit still, really. So I had an initial rather blissful 3 weeks where I spent a lot of time sitting down knitting and listening to history podcasts. You couldn't ask for more, really, could you? It was absolutely wonderful. Well, apart from the agony every time I tried to move or breathe a bit, that wasn't so good. But I had got from the library the book by Arne and Carlos. I can't remember properly what it's called. I'll put it in the show notes. But essentially, it's 50 Christmas baubles to knit. And the proper word is, I know I'm going to murder the pronunciation and I apologise, but it's something along the lines of Julekula. Now, Jule, J-U-L-E, Yule, that's obviously where that comes from. Kula, K-U-L-E-R, I don't know what that means. But I presume it's a rough translation, is Christmas ball. But they're absolutely beautiful. They're very easy to do. They're really lovely designs. And I got the hang of knitting them. I was doing them most of the time. I started off doing them on DPNs, but then I switched to Magic Loop, and they work just as well on Magic Loop. But I am terrible at stuffing them. I mean, I love rugby, but I don't like my Christmas baubles to look like rugby balls. So I did so many, I gave them to people, and every time I really tried to get them round. And when you look at the ones that Arne and Carlos have done, they're perfectly spherical. I don't know how they did it. Mine were not perfectly spherical. And somebody posted a picture on Instagram a while ago of this beautiful, perfectly spherical bauble. And I said, oh, they look so lovely and they're perfectly spherical. And she said, oh, I put polystyrene ball inside. I thought, ah, oh, that's the way to go. And she said, it gets a bit tight at the top. And I thought, yeah, I bet it does. But because I use Magic Loop, I can imagine that could be a lot simpler. So I have ordered some polystyrene balls, which I've just realised haven't arrived yet. I have a funny feeling they're coming from China. I can't really remember. And sometimes when you order, it's not obvious anyway. But there we go. I mean, even if they don't arrive until the end of November, it doesn't take long to knit one of these baubles, depending on what I'm up to. They're the work of an evening or a couple of evenings. I'm looking forward to those arriving, and I'm looking forward to giving these, because I didn't have any problem with the knitting, and it's really lovely to know that I can make these. They've got beautiful designs and I can give them as a gift, and they're going to be round and they're going to be proper. And I was struggling slightly measuring them, because obviously I've got some that I've stuffed and not given, and I was measuring those and it was slightly tricky, and in the end I erred on the larger side, because I thought when I've stuffed them, they're not really stretched. So I've got polystyrene balls coming that are slightly bigger, only fractionally. I mean, we're talking 5 millimetres tops, than the baubles that I have made, because I thought that, you know, then they can, if they have to stretch even slightly, that'll be fine. It will show the pattern well. So that's the theory. A theory is a marvellous thing, as I've learnt time and time again. But we'll see. I'll end up forgetting all about them, and then they'll suddenly arrive, and that'll all be very exciting. I suppose I could do something similar I could use them to stuff the Halloween apple cosies. I mean, I happen to put them round apples, but I could just as easily put a polystyrene ball inside, and you could sort of come up with some arrangement for hanging them around in the house. It'd just be a bit of fun. My theory is to make at least one of those Halloween things every year, and so as time goes on, you know, you end up with a bit of a collection of them. That's the theory, but as I may have said before somewhere, theory is a wonderful thing. Oh my goodness, I've nattered on today. I do apologise. Thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to chatting to you next week. Bye!